Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. Last week, the federal government announced that it is inquiring into the handling of sexual assault cases on 55 college campuses across the country. No New Mexico schools appear on the recently released list of schools under investigation, but the University of New Mexico, for one, has been proactive in setting up programs related to sexual assault prevention and support for survivors of assault. But are we doing enough to prevent sexual assault on campus and beyond, and to support survivors? Joining me in studio today to discuss the issue of sexual assault on campus and in the general population are the director of the University of New Mexico's Women's Resource Center, Summer Little, the executive director of the Rape Crisis Center of Central New Mexico, Mai Sagbakken, and J.R. Oppenheim, assistant sports editor for the Daily Lobo. Welcome to all of you. Thank you for being here today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And Mai Sagbakken, let's start with you. You've been the director, the executive director of the Rape Crisis Center of Central New Mexico since November of 2013,
yes,
I believe.
Correct.
So fairly new. But when you and I were talking in preparation for the show, you shared a bit about what your experience was when you told people that you would be taking the job as director of the Rape Crisis Center. Could you share that experience with listeners, please?
Yes, thank you, Kathleen, for having this breakfast conversation with us this morning, because having this position and announcing it, I certainly observed a different kind of reaction. Most of the time, there was a silence or a grimace or sometimes tears. Some people said, oh, thank you. Or one person told me, oh, I'm sorry. So I quickly learned that I could not bring up my job at a dinner conversation. It stops quite often, very short, because it's very emotional. It's very personal to people. Some people know victims of assault. Some have personal experiences, and the numbers are so staggering that it's very uncomfortable to even think about. So that's been my experience.
Now, Summer Little, so that's in the general population. You, as the director of the Women's Resource Center on campus, one of the programs you've been involved with is the university's sexual assault response team. And so do you find on campus that people also don't want to talk about sexual assault?
Generally, yes. It's quite difficult to get large numbers of people to come out to events for sexual assault awareness when we advertise them. We have better luck if we just sort of set up a table or a campaign and then people stop by. But like Mai has suggested, it's something that people really shy away from because it's too painful and too heinous to think about. So when we're trying to raise awareness and talk about sexual assault, it's a big challenge.
Now, J.R. Oppenheim, for the Daily Lobo, you reported on recent sexual assault allegations against two Lobo football players. So you had to get out and actually mm-hmm. have conversations with people about sexual assault. Tell us a little bit about how those conversations went on campus.
Yeah, it's definitely not the easiest thing to report on when you're a reporter. I mean, it's just one of those things that you just need to really be careful, not only to protect the rights of the victims, but also the rights of the accused, too. In terms of what I've been hearing on campus, I haven't heard too much conversation on campus. I do know that the two players in question have returned to classes, and from what I've heard from people who have attended those classes, there's kind of like a when they first walked into the room, there was kind of like a weird vibe, just the fact that that cloud was hanging over those players' heads.
Now, there's some distinction. Some people call people victims or survivors, but the woman who made those allegations, she has not returned to school, has she?
No, she has not.
Okay. Well, what was it like? Did you have to go out and talk to students about to try to get information, or did you mostly talk with administrators?
No, we had a couple of other people on this story besides myself. We've had Thomas Romero Salas, and I've kind of been focusing more on the players themselves, and then Chloe Henson, our news editor, she's kind of been focusing more on that side of things, so I'm not too familiar with some of those conversations with students. But I do know that UNM, at least in terms of getting out in front of this story, just to be, you know, holding their press conferences to discuss the arrest of the two players, UNM has definitely been really tried to be proactive and really try to get ahead of the story.
Okay. Well, we have these statistics, and every year there's an analysis of data from the New Mexico Interpersonal Violence Data Central Repository by Dr. Betty Caponera for the New Mexico Coalition of Sexual Assault Programs. So here's just a tiny little bit of data of information we have derived from 2012 data most recently regarding New Mexico. One in four females will experience rape or attempted rape in their lifetime. One in 20 males will experience rape or attempted rape in their lifetime. And the percentage of rapes reported to law enforcement, 17%. And I went back, I looked, you know, probably about 5 years, and those numbers have sort of held steady. And those numbers drop a bit nationally. But I'm curious, do we, Summer, have any statistics regarding campus sexual assault? Do they mirror society as a whole?
Overall, they do. The statistics for women on campus are 1 in 5 who will experience an attempted or completed rape. Specifically to UNM, we don't have really good numbers as of yet. I know this is our first year that we've been collecting data as a sexual assault response team, and that data will be analyzed shortly after the semester ends. So we'll have a little bit more concrete data to look at. The federal government is, or the White House task force, excuse me, is suggesting that all schools complete an anonymous survey within the next year voluntarily, and then they're looking to make it required after that to for all of us to get really good data on campus. So we look forward to that process.
And the anonymity of that reporting should go a long way, because we're seeing that only 17% of people report rapes or sexual assault. So let's just talk a little bit about if there's any difference regarding sexual assault on campus from sexual assault in the general population. And I say that because it would seem to me there would be built-in support groups on campus. Is there also training? And JR, let's start with you. What year are you, a junior? Did you?
I'm a senior.
You're a senior. So you 4 years at UNM. What did you, have you received training? Have you received education on sexual assault on campus?
Well,
what has
been
your experience?
I came in as a transfer student. So okay. I know my last college was a community college in Western Nebraska. And I don't, this was back in 2000 when I was in college first time. And I don't necessarily recall specific training for freshmen in regards to sexual assault. I do believe that for incoming freshmen for UNM, they do try to hit that hard. I'm trying to think back to when I started, when I came in as a transfer student. I do believe they discussed it during my orientation, but I'm not, I can't remember. There was kind of like a lot of different things going on for orientation, but I do remember that was one of the things that was discussed.
Okay, and so tell us, Summer, is there anything that differentiates sort of the discussion or the experience of sexual assault on campuses from the general population?
Well, I think that age group, that 18 to 24 age group, has a higher risk of sexual assault. So, you know, putting that many of that age together on a campus, you're going to see higher numbers. I just wanted to go back to the education piece, if I could.
Sure.
So one of the things that the Women's Resource Center and the Sexual Assault Response Team Steering Committee is working on is identifying how we are going to meet the requirements of ongoing training for all incoming students at UNM and staff and faculty. We have to begin training everyone. So with a campus our size, that's quite a daunting task. So that's on our plate moving forward. Currently, there is a piece in the new student orientation that covers sexual assault, and we are putting together a booklet, like a newsletter, that will cover a lot more information to be released probably soon or early fall to everyone on campus as a first step. But we will be identifying those educational programs. And that is in addition to all the programs that we already do at the Women's Resource Center through our Gendered Violence Prevention Program. We've been offering bystander intervention training, primary prevention training, and awareness building activities, presentations, and campaigns, and that kind of thing.
Well, we'll dig into that a little more, but
sure.
But Mai, let's get to you, because so on campus there's sort of a captive audience per se. You know, materials can be given out to the general student population. In the general population, how do we go about educating people?
Well, President Obama just issued a report, and his point was that everyone needs to take a stand against sexual assault. And that means everyone who's listening, starting to have conversations with their children, with each other, with neighbors, to raise awareness and educate each other about some of the risk factors. Some of the misunderstandings is that rape occurs in the alley, but 89% of rape is with people you know. So people need to start understand dynamics that rape victims don't come in necessarily beaten up is because they know the perpetrators. So we have a lot of misconceptions out in the community as to who they are. And because of that, rape happens over and over again because we see it sometimes as a private matter. We see it as as the woman's fault. And it's a crime. So I think we need to really start stepping up, looking at this as a criminal issue and educating each other about what and who it is and where it happens.
Well, and you did say there's a perception that it's a woman's fault, but rape happens to men as well, does
yes.
it not?
Well, yeah, 98% of people who rape are men, and more than 90% of the people who are raped are women. But yes, there is 1 out of 20 men are raped. And what's unique with males is that most are raped when they are children. And 57% of victims are under the age of 18 in general.
Now, just tell us briefly at the Rape Crisis Center of Central New Mexico, who can avail themselves of your services and what are those services?
Well, our services are available 24/7 to anyone over the age of 13. And you can come to us for any sexual assault that happened at any time in your life. And we service Bernalillo County and the surrounding counties. You can call our hotline, 266-7712, at any time. And we offer free counseling at our main office on Candelaria and Eubank. We also have a walk-in clinic downtown at the Family Advocacy Center. And we accompany you to the SANE exam, the sexual assault nurse exam, that needs to happen within 5 days of an incident or a rape. And we also accompany you if you decide or choose to report, and if you want to obtain a restraining order, or if you need housing or transportation, whatever needs you have as a result of a sexual assault.
So very comprehensive services.
Very comprehensive and free to the public.
And even students who might be at the University of New Mexico can come and take part in whatever programs you have?
Yes, and this is a very important piece because there's a misconception that you have to report to the police, but you do not have to report. You can call the Rape Crisis Center, as an example, and talk to one of the advocates and get guidance and discuss, you know, your situation and what you want to do so you can make the right choices that are right for you.
And tell us your hotline number one more time.
It's 266-7712.
266-7712. We're talking today about sexual assault on campus and beyond. I'm joined by the director of the University of New Mexico's Women's Resource Center, Summer Little, by the executive director of the Rape Crisis Center of Central New Mexico, Mai Sagbakken, and by J.R. Oppenheim, assistant sports editor for the Daily Lobo. If you would like to join in our discussion, there are several ways for you to participate. You may email comments to callinshow at KUNM.org. You may post comments on the Call In Show webpage, also at KUNM.org. You may call our local number, 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back with our guests and with your calls and comments.
Support provided by New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where increased member participation in their not-for-profit financial cooperative has increased benefits. For a financial calculator and member benefit details, go to nmefcu.org.
KUNM hosts a members' free concert at the Albuquerque Museum Amphitheater with three great New Mexico bands and world-class oud player Rahim Alhaj, Friday, May 16th. Enjoy Bluegrass with Atomic Grass, the Aya Band's Reggae Soul, and the Freeman Baldwin LeClaire Trio's Beatbox Jazz, then the hauntingly beautiful oud. If you are a current member of KUNM, email the name on your membership and whether you want one or two tickets to membersfree@kunm.org.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about sexual assault on campus and beyond. And we've got our, we wanted to just bring one thing up just to revisit, Summer. We talked about the Rape Crisis Center, and you wanted to mention the affiliation with them.
I do. They are the Rape Crisis Center of Central New Mexico and also the SANE Collaborative, the Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner Collaborative, are some of our main partners in the sexual assault response team on campus. So anyone who experiences sexual assault on campus can contact either one of those agencies and activate the rest of the SART team, which includes the counseling pieces and the law enforcement and the student conduct piece, if they choose to. They can activate one part or no parts or whatever they want to do. It's completely victim-centered and victim-controlled. But I did want to acknowledge that we are so lucky and fortunate to have a great relationship with the Rape Crisis Center of Central New Mexico.
And I also want to let people know that we have links to the various organizations on our website and also the Rape Crisis Center hotline. So if you didn't hear that, 266-7712. You can certainly go to KUNM.org and get that as well. We've got our phone lines filling up, so let's go ahead and bring in our first caller. It's Glenn from Jemez Springs. Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning. Thank you for having this topic. In the early to mid-70s, I was a chaplain at University of Chicago Hospitals, Southside Chicago, and there's a lot of rape at that time. And chaplains were the first and only ones to respond to victims. I never had a man come and talk, and I started thinking as I was listening to the program this morning, do you have men who will respond to men if men come to the Rape Crisis Center? And what is that kind of dynamic like if men are willing to come in? And then I guess as a former Navy chaplain, I would like to put the word out to any military who are listening, if there are any men who might dare to call in and share their experience. And then that relates to the thing that was in the news last year, that the commanding officers sometimes are not the best people to be related to this whole thing when a person is raped. So if anybody out in the listening audience could call in, especially a man and a former victim, I think that would be informative to your discussion. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Glenn. And Ma, you want to address his question. So if a man walks into the Rape Crisis Center, who talks to him?
You know, if a man walks into a Rape Crisis Center, he has a lot of courage, number one, like you were just talking about, because there's, I think, even more shame for men coming to the Rape Crisis Center. And we're also trying to think about changing our name to make it more accessible to males. When they do come in, they will be treated like any other survivor in our center. Currently, we do not have any male counselors. We have talked about this as a gender issue, especially because we're now reaching out and working with inmates because of the Prison Rape Elimination Act. We're seeing the need to have male advocates and female advocates. So that's an issue we talk about in general. We did just recently make a video for the public, and we did have a male client stepping forward and sharing his story. So yes, the answer is yes. We're there for both female and males, and we need more men to come forward, as we do know that the numbers are high.
And Summer Little, how about on campus? If a male wants to report a sexual assault?
In several of the agencies, or most of the components, there would be males available to talk with them if they feel more comfortable with that. I agree, it takes a lot of courage for a male victim to come forward, because that really it's really complex and challenges our notions of masculinity as it's been constructed, about how tough men have to be. And rape is a crime of power and control. So if a male is a victim of a rape, that means he wasn't strong enough, almost, or that's the perception. And so that plays into why a lot of men, I think, won't come forward.
Well, right. As me being the only male here on the panel, I just, you know,
I've
never really thought about, you know, what would happen in that kind of situation, but I'm just not sure, like, I would be able to wrap my brain around that. I mean, just like you said, Summer, it's just with the sense of masculinity and the sense of needing constantly to be strong. I just don't know how any man can deal with it.
And or be able to report
or
it
be
or
able
talk
to report it or even just
talk about it.
I mean, I would imagine just trying to just block it out of my mind completely.
Well, and I think that's probably what happened with women for many years as well.
I was just going to say that. That's what happens with many victims of sexual assault. And that's why that, you know, the reporting numbers are so very low. Number one, it's hard to wrap your head around that. It's hard to recover from that. It's hard to get up the next morning. There are increased risks for suicide, for suicidal thoughts, for depression, for PTSD. The effects of sexual assault are intense and extensive. But also, there's the victim blaming that happens, right? In the media, sometimes even in our friends. The person that we confide in might say, well, why were you there? Why did you go with him? Well, why did you get drunk? Why were you wearing that skirt? As if any of those things mean that a victim asked for it. One of the things that we're doing on campus is we've started a Start by Believing campaign.
Now, I saw you wrote a letter to the editor of the Daily Lobo that I read.
Yes. And it's just to encourage people in the community to suspend their need for information, for investigation, even for justice in that moment, just to believe somebody who confides in you that they've been sexually assaulted.
Male or female.
Male or female. Or members of the LGBTQ communities are very impacted by sexual assault as well and can get services at the Rape Crisis Center of Central New Mexico. Just believe. Just provide that safe space and say, I'm here for you. What do you need?
Yeah. Okay. Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Judy from Albuquerque who wants to talk about some of the articles that have appeared in the Daily Lobo. Hi, Judy. Thanks for joining our conversation.
Well, thank you. Last fall, there were some very disturbing articles, I thought, in the Lobo, and I stopped reading it for a while. One was about some kind of a club on the west side that had very salacious activities, sadomasochistic portrayals, and all of this was just reported straightforward in the Lobo as if it were something legitimate. And then I believe at that time also there were two assaults on campus that were kind of not taken very seriously. There is somebody there from the Lobo, and I just wonder if the Lobo intentionally cleaned up its act. It seems a lot better now. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Judy. JR?
When I was on staff last year, I'm not sure if I recall the story, the first story that you're talking about the sadomasochistic club. The thing with the Daily Lobo, it's hard for me as a sports guy not to think in sports analogies, but we're basically like a sports team, and there's constant turnover. And so when we brought in our new management team, you know, things change. And now, you know, we have a new management team. It changes over every year.
Right.
And so we'll see, you know, how things kind of progress with this new team. In terms of not taking assault seriously, I don't believe that in either, you know, last year or this year's staff of students, we really took the issue of assault lightly or didn't think it was anything serious. I mean, I do recall that there was a sexual assault allegations against people in a frat house, and that was something that we took very seriously and tried to report on fairly and accurately.
You know, one of the things that really propelled the Obama administration acting were actions taken by publications at Columbia University and articles that came out about survivors of assault and their experiences. So student publications really helped move this issue to the forefront.
Well, the thing that with the Daily Lobo, it's really kind of an interesting thing. We are students. You know, there's a lot of people that are learning how to be journalists for the first time. It's a lab, in essence, unlike anything else that's on campus. And I mean, I used to work for the newspaper down in Alamogordo before I came back to UNM. And I had been in a number of stories, not as a writer. This one particular story involving the football players is my first sexual assault story allegation involving that I've written myself. Mm-hmm. And it's so different. And, you know, unless you have a lot of experience doing something like this, it's really kind of a tough thing to report on. I myself, in this particular story, I've tried extremely hard just to make sure that everything has been reported accurately and fairly.
Well, I bet you learned a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And worked closely with your editor.
Oh, yeah, very, very closely.
To make sure you followed journalistic standards. That's the Daily Lobo teaches you that. That's a great thing.
Yeah, definitely. No doubt about that.
Let's go ahead and bring in an email question from Michael. Michael wonders, what efforts are being done at UNM to explore and educate about the link between alcohol consumption and sexual assault? And are there crossover efforts between alcohol education groups and sexual assault prevention groups on campus? And Summer, you're shaking your head yes, if you want to address that.
Yes. In any awareness campaign that we do or awareness event, we're talking about how alcohol is the number one date rape drug. It is. That we have in the past collaborated with the Campus Office of Substance Abuse Prevention, and I look forward to doing that in the future as well because, you know, that is a very important overlap. That also will be a large component of any educational program that we bring in or develop. As I was talking about earlier, we need to develop an educational program for all incoming students and all existing faculty and staff. And so that information will definitely be part of that.
You know, there was a recent article, I believe it was May 3rd, 2014, in the New York Times, a very comprehensive article, Fight Against Sexual Assault Holds Colleges to Account. And that article delved into that sort of combination of alcohol and sex. And there was a caution there that said, colleges be very careful because you're so close to starting to blame the victim, depending upon how you portray this issue. Is that something you look out for when you're talking about alcohol consumption?
Absolutely. Anything we do, the first thing we're looking for are instances where we might be inadvertently blaming the victim. We never want to do that. Rape is never a victim's fault. The only person who can stop a rape is the rapist. And no matter how much a person has had to drink, no matter what behavior they are exhibiting, no matter what they're wearing, no matter anything, they're not asking to be raped. And the rapist is the only one who's in control of that.
We're talking today about sexual assault on campus and beyond. If you'd like to join in our discussion, you may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may also call our local number, 277-5866, that's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. Let's bring in our next caller. It's John from Albuquerque. John, you wanted to talk to us a little bit about the statistics on males getting raped. Please join our conversation.
That's correct. I am one of those former male clients of the Rape Crisis Center. I was raped in the early 80s, and when I got up the nerve to come in, I did have a female counselor. I did not specify gender, and she was magnificent. She was absolutely wonderful. I want to point out one thing that she told me, which was that a majority of men who rape women have been raped themselves. One of the things that means is that if you're saying 10% of rape victims are male, that statistic could be way, way, way off. Mm-hmm. And the main reason for that is that rape in prisons, jails, and some other all-male institutions is vastly underreported. on the amount of rape that goes on in prisons and jails may, in fact, of men, may, in fact, be more frequent and more common than women being raped.
Well, John, I want to get Mai to comment, but I want to ask you a question. As a male who came forward and sought counseling after a traumatic rape or sexual assault, what would you say to other males who maybe have had that experience but haven't come forward in any way, even privately, to talk to a counselor? What did coming forward and talking with someone, what did that do for you?
As I said, a whole bunch of healing began in that time. It would take much, much too long to describe.
Okay.
But the one thing I was critical about, and this was not directly the fault of the Rape Crisis Center at all, was that my counselor did suggest at one point that I might want to take some self-defense classes that were specifically being held at the YWCA. So since I didn't have a car at the time, I took the last bus downtown and got to the YWCA because the bus schedule was a few minutes late. And right then and there, I was told by the lady who was the head of the self-defense class, "Oh, we're sorry, this is for women only," which meant that I had to travel back home by foot. This was about 2 miles through the same streets that were being frequented by my rapist.
Ah, well, I'm sorry. I'm sorry about that experience, John, but thank you for calling.
That was my counselor. She was very, very sorry to hear that happened. Here's an example of how great she was.
John, let me move forward, but thank you for your call today. Thank you so much for calling and talking about your experience. Mai, you wanted to go ahead and comment a little bit about what John had to report.
Yeah, thank you, John, for sharing your experience, and I'm grateful to hear that you got the support you needed from the Rape Crisis Center. I wanted to address your last point because yesterday I had a conversation with a good friend of mine who did share that also her son had experienced an assault. It was not a sexual assault, but a burglary. And she shared with me that she had failed to think that she needed to also make sure her son had a self-defense course. She had provided one for her daughter through YMCA, but not for her son, because she didn't think about that. And in general, the Rape Crisis Center does not promote self-defense classes because it's, again, blaming the victim. But we do live in a society where a small minority of the sexual assaults do happen in the streets or in the valley or in a car or in somebody's apartment. So it is healthy to be equipped with certain response tools that you can react with to get away. But we need to caution everyone to think that just taking a self-defense course is going to help you, because most rapes do not happen that way. But there are courses available. Now, in terms of the male numbers in correctional facilities, we do talk about cross-gender staffing. In the U.S., this is the only country in the Western world that do allow cross-gender staffing, meaning females with male inmates or males with female inmates. And there's a lot of rape happening due to that. In the juvenile facilities, a lot of male young juveniles are raped by women, guards. More than 80% of rape in juvenile facilities are by guards. So it's very important to think about staffing and training. And, of course, there's a lot of male-to-male and female-to-female in prisons. And surprisingly, the population of female inmates is smaller in the U.S., but the amount of rape is higher. So, again, the female population is having the higher percentage of rape happening.
Let's go ahead and bring in our next caller. It's Mary from Santa Fe, who wants to talk about education. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to just ask a question or bring up some of the newer research that's being done around bystander intervention with rape. And what I mean by that is that, you know, in settings where there is a lot of alcohol and a lot of young people drinking, that often a bystander, someone else who's just there and can observe what they think is going on. Maybe they see, you know, a friend or just someone they recognize or even someone they don't recognize sort of moving into that level of inebriation where their judgment doesn't look like it's very good. And, you know, we might have the thought, well, you know, that person's really in trouble, or, you know, that guy, you know, looking more aggressive than I've ever seen him look before. Might, you know, he must be getting drunk. I guess, and I was calling in response to a statement paraphrasing that the only person that can stop a rape is a rapist, and I'm not agreeing with that. I think that you can stop a rape as a bystander if you happen to see the warning signs, kind of using the, you know, the analogies that's infused our culture now from, you know, the 9/11. If you see a bag sitting there that no one's attending, then report it. That, you know, if you see a woman or a man who's starting to behave in such a way that looks as though, you know, they could be headed to some really poor decision-making because of alcohol, that there might be ways to intervene either directly or indirectly, or maybe even by asking for a security person to step in or something like that.
All right, Mary, let's get some response, and thank you so much for your call today. And boy, has this been in the news the last few years when we've seen people, rather than intervening, putting things on social media, filming incidents, a big case out of Pennsylvania. Summer, you want to start, and then I'll move to you, JR.
Sure. No, I appreciate the comment. And when I said that ultimately a rapist is the only person who can stop a rape, I do stand by that comment, because we see that a lot of rapists are serial rapists, and rape for them is a crime of opportunity to exert their power. So it may be, you know, maybe they get diverted at some point, but their intention is to rape somebody at some point. And they're the only ones who can decide not to do that. However, I love that you said, you know, bystander intervention is so critical, and there are so many levels that we can intervene at. Because it's a continuum, we can call out our friends when they make a joke about rape. We can call out our friends who are on sports teams, for instance. I'm not picking on athletes, but this just popped into my head. Sometimes when teams come off the field, they might say to one another, oh boy, we raped that team. Well, no, you didn't. You won a game. So that's not an appropriate joke. Right? Rape isn't funny. Sexual assault isn't funny. We can kind of point out to our friends, our family, the media, anytime we see victim blaming. We can attend bystander intervention trainings, which we do offer. And that really breaks down the different levels where you can intervene. We talk about party scenarios. We talk about the rape culture scenarios. In a party scenario, if friends are around or anybody, and you see somebody who's struggling, who you think might be more vulnerable because they have been drinking, or you see somebody who's acting in a predatory way around them, it can be as simple as just discreetly calling 911 and say, look, I think somebody's going to get attacked here. So it can be that way, where you're not stepping in yourself. You could enlist the help of a friend and say, hey, go divert that guy by pretending you think he's somebody else, and we'll get her out of here, or vice versa. Or it can be, you know, a direct approach, depending on the relationship between the person you think is a danger and who you are. So the first thing to do is figure out how to safely intervene, because we don't want
that's important.
We don't want bystanders to go around attacking people. We don't want more violence, right? And we don't want them to get in trouble, and we don't want them to put themselves in danger. So by identifying what violence is, what the appropriate, safe, positive response is going to be will go a long way, and that's part of all the training that we provide at the Women's Resource Center.
And JR, we're going to get to you. I do want to let listeners know that we're talking today about sexual assault on campus and beyond. I'm joined by JR Oppenheim, assistant sports editor for the Daily Lobo, by Summer Little, the director of the University of New Mexico's Women Resource Center, and the executive director of the Rape Crisis Center of Central New Mexico, Mai Sagbakken. If you would like to join in our discussion, you may email comments to callinshow@kunm.org. You may call our local number, 277-5866, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866, with questions and comments. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with you.
Join UNM Continuing Education and New Mexico PBS in a joint anniversary celebration on Saturday, May 17th from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. Bring the whole family for activities, snacks, and more. Meet the Cat in the Hat. Discover programs for work and play for students of all ages. The celebration is held at the UNM Continuing Education Conference Center. No tickets necessary. For details, call 277-0077. A message from the tax-exempt UNM Continuing Education.
How does the process of birth impact new motherhood? Is it a rite of passage or a medical event? Next time on Well Woman Radio, we'll hear from Pam England, author of Birthing From Within, as well as several moms about their transition to motherhood. Join us this Friday morning for Well Woman Radio's Mother's Day special at 8 a.m. right here on KUNM.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo, for our discussion today on sexual assault on campus and beyond. And JR, we just heard from Mary from Santa Fe, and then Summer was talking about bystander intervention. And one thing that had come up was the social media aspect of college life. Give us your thoughts on what we've just been talking about, please.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not only the assistant sports editor, but I'm also the online editor for the Daily Lobo, and social media is a huge component for what I do. And it just seems like, especially with this younger generation, text messaging and Snapchats and Twitter and Facebook, I mean, Facebook not so much anymore, but really a lot of these other social media platforms is kind of like the premier way that a lot of people this generation seem to communicate. I do know that with the most recent arrests on campus, in one of the press conferences, Lieutenant Tim Stump, the public information officer, had said that they were looking for social media posts that would assist them in the investigation. And it's just interesting that, you know, people be using social media in this way to say, hey, look what I'm doing. But I think that social media is such a powerful tool that it could also be used to help in the education process. You know, getting out the word for events about particular events. There was one event when I was working, I was working for the newspaper in Alamogordo, and there was an event that had grown over the years that I was down there. It was called Take Back the Night, and it was focused not specifically on sexual assault specifically, but just violence against women in general. And the sexual assault was a huge component of that. I mean, because it's such, you know, it's violence against women, and you know, you could use the social media aspect to really kind of spread that word around.
You know, I don't know whether it was in the Daily Lobo or the Albuquerque Journal. I can't remember. But while I was researching, I did come across a mention of a tweet from there are three people who allegedly were participating in this sexual assault. And one was a former student. And I guess he was the driver of the car, allegedly. And he tweeted day after, maybe, just got my car cleaned. You know, just got my baby cleaned, or something, in the picture of the car. So there is some social media component to this evidence here. Let's go ahead and bring in Gloria from Northern New Mexico. She's our next caller. Good morning, Gloria. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate the fact that you are allowing me to voice my opinion. I have not heard anyone include an institution like a hospital where that there's a possibility of such a thing occurring. I'm afraid it is everywhere and anywhere. You go into a hospital thinking you're going for care or treatment, and then that type of thing occurs, it's really hard for me to understand why that sort of thing is allowed. I feel that if that occurs, who is the person that one goes to when you don't start trusting a doctor, maybe a social worker, maybe other staff members? Who do we go to? I mean, I look for a liaison, but there's no Native American liaison. And we need to kind of redo, I guess, or revamp whatever is in place. And I highly recommend that there has to be a Native American liaison there, male and female, because it's more comforting, I would think, if a male goes to a male and a female goes to a female. That's something that I did not hear, because I didn't really expect that sort of thing to happen. But I feel like it really can happen anywhere. And you just, whoever your provider is, to take care of you. But at the same time, if something like that occurs, what is the protocol then?
All right, Gloria, thank you so much for your call today, and we'll go ahead and get some comment. And I do want to ask first, Mai, there's a New Mexico Coalition of Sexual Assault Programs. Is this a place where people can go to find people to whom they can place their trust in?
In
terms of talking about, Gloria was mentioning something that would happen in an institution, losing trust. Who do you talk to? Are there organizations all over the state?
Well, you can call the Rape Crisis Center, and the Coalition for Sexual Assault can provide technical assistance to institutions that want to set up protocols. I think Gloria is bringing up an extremely important point, and that is, how do I report? Because most institutions, including UNM, are struggling to set up confidential reporting protocols so that a survivor or a victim can report and feel safe. This is extremely important in the correctional facilities because of the risk of retaliation, because inmates cannot leave. So once they report and the incident is happening with a guard, that person is at risk unless there's a confidential protocol or a hotline or anything set up. Gloria is also mentioning, as a Native American, she would like not only to speak to maybe a female or have a choice as a male, just talk to a male, but to a Native American. So she's bringing up a cultural approach or cultural aspects of sexual assault, that we need to be culturally sensitive. And at the Rape Crisis Center, we do have two Spanish-speaking victim advocates that can respond to victims or survivors coming in speaking only Spanish or are bilingual, but there are multiple languages in Albuquerque, including native languages. But as hospitals, she's reminding me that we need to focus beyond university. It's correctional, it's the detention centers, it's the holding facilities, it's the hospitals, it's in the day treatment centers of young people. Every institution needs to, if they have not already, develop confidential protocols and be sensitive to gender and culture.
Anybody else want to comment on that? Or let's go to our next caller, probably our last caller of the day. It's Bob from Albuquerque. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Kathleen. I just wanted to point out the institutional aspect, I think, a lot of this, too, that needs to be dealt with. I saw in the journal yesterday an article, I think about 800-some pedophile priests have been defrocked, which is basically rape towards young men, usually. But the article didn't say anything had been done in a criminal manner of turning these priests over to prosecution for criminal activities. And I think there's a real social acceptance of violence and aggression towards society, other lesser, it's a power structure, as your guests have talked about. And I know this from a fact, because when I was a young man growing up in this culture, there was always a subtext threat of rape by older boys against younger boys to keep them in line. And then I saw this again in the military, that there was always this subtle undercurrent there that, well, you know, if you don't follow orders or get too much out of line, you know, we'll deal with you in this kind of way. And it's there, and men know this too. And so it's institutional in our society. It's a social disease that really is set up to empower men over lesser men and women. And we have to deal with it that way, I think. And I look at it, too, in terms of economics. Our whole economy of capitalism is a predatory system. Our foreign policy is, as a nation, is one of raping other lesser countries of the world to establish dominance. So I see a real structural, cultural basis to this, and I think to tackle that, it's not only up to say it's up to men, but we have to look at it as a national social disease, and in order to tackle this. So,
all right, Bob, thanks so much for your call this morning, and very briefly, Summer.
Thank you, Bob, for your point. I think that you're right. We do need to attack this in on as many levels as possible, and we do see predatory activities as being natural and entitled and the norm, and we do need to challenge that. There's a recent study out just a couple of weeks ago about young people and how they have really, how they explain sexual assault and sexual harassment and sexual abuse is that they consider it to be a normal part of life, and that's what we have to change.
We have two quick things to sort of wrap up here. I want to bring in Elena really quickly, who wants to make a brief point about something. Please go ahead briefly, Elena.
Hi, my name is Alina Scheim. I'm with Impact Personal Safety, and we teach violence prevention and self-defense. And I just wanted to comment on the Federal Task Force initiative really emphasizing reporting and men's intervention and bystander intervention and how that really leaves out women's agency. Certainly we want to avoid victim blaming and avoid putting it on women to stop sexual assault. However, in order for it to be really comprehensive, we need to work on changing the culture and changing men's ability to intervene and be good bystanders, as well as women's ability to advocate for themselves and be a part of prevention also.
All right. And thank you so much for your call. And very briefly.
Thank you, Alina. I do want to say two things. Yes, we want to make sure that we're not putting responsibility on men to protect women. That's not what this is about. This is about everybody stepping up and doing what they can when they see something going on. The second thing I want to say is Impact Personal Safety out of Santa Fe, which Alina is the director of, is an awesome organization. We've partnered with them to provide self-defense courses on campus. I've taken their 20-hour women's basic course, and it is awesome.
Well, as a way of wrapping up with you, JR, we had a couple of email comments that mentioned sexual harassment on campus, maybe a precursor to sexual assault. So talk to us a little bit about what you'd like to see on campus. Is there something more you think UNM can be doing or any campus?
Well, I think, excuse me, I've been battling allergies all week. I think there could be more events necessarily maybe on campus that can kind of just get the word out, as opposed to, you know, waiting for people to come to you. You actually go out to the community to try to spread that word. I mean, I think the fact that we're talking about this today is a good example of that. But, I mean, I think any way that the word can get out about how to prevent this, really from all angles, I think that's going to be the best bet on campus.
Okay.
I do want to point out that sexual assault is an extreme version of sexual harassment. It is a form of sexual harassment, and make no mistake about that.
All right. And Mai, as a wrap-up, what would you like to say?
Starting early. I would encourage APS and all elementary, middle, and high schools to join us. You know, all teachers, the superintendent needs to get on board so we can start early to prevent sexual assault.
And your hotline number one more time for the Rape Crisis Center of Central New Mexico?
266-7712.
Well, thanks so much to our guest today, Executive Director of the Rape Crisis Center of Central New Mexico, Mai Sagbakken, Summer Little, Director of the University of New Mexico's Women's Resource Center, and J.R. Oppenheim, Assistant Sports Editor for the Daily Lobo. Thanks to each of you for what you've added to our discussion today. Thanks for being available to our listeners. Thanks to our callers for helping to develop our discussion today. Apologies to anyone we were unable to speak with. Thanks to our engineer, Jefferson White. Michael Hess has handled our phones today. Elaine Bobgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show on KUNM, news and music that connect from the University of New Mexico.